Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
I would even come up to the early 30s and see a man grappling with the problems of the bankruptcy of his nation and come with an eloquent cry that we have nothing to fear but fear itself, but I wouldn't stop there. Strangely enough, I would turn to the Almighty and say, if you allow me to live just a few years in the second half of the 20th century, I will be happy.
That is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the famed I've Been to the Mountaintop speech delivered in Memphis just prior to his assassination in 1968.
And I see God working in this period of the 20th century in a way that men in some strange way are responding. Something is happening in our world.
A lot has happened since those words were proclaimed nearly 54 years ago now. Yolanda Frazier was just a toddler then. Her parents likely could never have envisioned the path that she would carve through the Army in a 30-year career that came with deployments overseas, sometimes heart-wrenching assignments, and positions of great responsibility. Before we're done, you're going to hear about the nonprofit she's running now, Enough International. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. But sitting in the spacious hall of VFW Post 10147 in Apopka, Florida, Yolanda made it clear that while she didn't initially intend to join our armed forces, military service is in her DNA.
A military brat. I was born in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. My father was stationed there, and then we moved to Yarba Linda, California, and then from later after that, we moved to Biloxi, Mississippi, where he was stationed at Keesler Air Force Base. So my father retired Air Force. I have two other brothers that were also in the Air Force and another brother in the Army. And so I was around all of these military veterans, and of course, during that time, I was not thinking about going into the military. I was a journalism major. I have an associate degree in journalism, bachelor of science degree in radio, television, and film. I was supposed to be on CNN somewhere. And somehow another, and I went to the University of Southern Mississippi, USM, and ROTC was just awesome. I love the discipline. I love the structure. And so I actually got in the ROTC as an elective. Had no idea. They were just totally hooked me and reeled me in. And so next thing I know, I end up joining, and it was the greatest decision I ever made for my career.
And 30 years in the military, I'm sure you saw the military itself change a little bit over that time. And I'm thinking specifically to women in the military, you probably saw a fair amount of change.
Yes, definitely. When I first joined, actually joined in 1987, my first duty assignment was Fort Huachuca, Arizona. They used to call it Fort We Gotcha. Fort McCullen, which is the area of the WAC. And also, I was an NBC officer, nuclear biological chemical officer. And so starting off in the military, at that time, women did not go into combat. And of course, things have evolved tremendously since then. So there was a lot of things during my career I actually saw evolved. You had the don't ask, don't tell. And just a list of things have totally changed tremendously based on what you see now in the military and what I actually observed and experienced when I first came in.
What are some of the things that you really appreciated about your time in the military? And maybe what are some of the challenges that you faced?
Some of the things I really appreciated was being able to have that family camaraderie in the military. Being an officer, we were trained early that our non-commissioned officers trained us. And so having those individuals, those senior non-commissioned officers, basically show us the ropes. They showed us how to be strategic leaders, transformational leaders, visionary leaders, and they also gave us examples of how not to be toxic leaders. And so that was something that really weighed heavy on my heart, because they taught us about character, about integrity, about leading by example. So it's not just what I say, but how I live my life. Being a very strong advocate for Jesus Christ and having those morals and values from being raised that way basically just overwhelmed me in the military also, because so many times in your military career, you find yourself in situations and circumstances where you're going to have to call on something bigger and greater than yourself, right? And so those foundational aspects of morals and values just were things that I carried close and dear to me. But having those good non-commissioned officers that would pull us to the side and say, look, this is how you shouldn't be as a leader. These are things that to be a good leader that you're going to have to maintain and carry with you, because it's not just what you say as a soldier, but it's how you conduct your life, because soldiers are always not only listening to you, but watching the things that you do.
What are some examples of some of the assignments you had, some of the places that you got sent, some of the difficult tasks that you had to carry out?
So one of the most refreshing and rewarding positions I had was a TAC officer. And so as a TAC officer, you have two non-commissioned officers that work with you, TAC NCOs, and you train second lieutenants right out of college. And so oftentimes, even when I was a second lieutenant, I used to think I was getting picked on. And you know, it was like they're just calling me out, right? But the realistic aspect about it was that my TAC officer saw different leadership qualities in me. And lo and behold, as time went on, after I left Fort Huachuca, Arizona, I ended up going to Fort McCullen, and as a captain, I was a TAC officer training second lieutenants. And believe it or not, when you're there training those young minds, right, they're getting that first opportunity outside of ROTC to get an experience of what the Army's going to be like and how they can be leaders to affect the other leaders that they're going to actually be over. Because oftentimes, as a young officer, you are leading non-commissioned officers that are more experienced and much older than you are. And so to be able to train them that when you go into these organizations, whether you're a platoon leader or a captain or whatever your rank is, being humble enough to be able to learn from others that are around you that have more knowledge and experience. And so being able to share those attributes and those aspects with these young officers and being able to challenge them to be better individuals. Because sometimes you think joining the military, you know, they do break you down and bring you back up under their guidance and their morals, their values, their standards and requirements that the Army has. But guess what? You're still an individual. You're still going to be challenged to think for yourself and make those challenging decisions, right? That's going to set you apart from others. And so being a TAC officer was one of those awesome opportunities. And it was very interesting. You know, I'm a very humble person, always happy. But sometimes especially when it came down to life and death, I had young officers, one in mine that was from Citadel, and he was about 6'4", and I'm standing up there correcting him and having him stand in the position of attention, because it was just that important. Because one day, the things that you do or don't do can either save a life or lead someone to a conversation that you have to have with their parents because you were not doing the things that you were supposed to be doing as a leader. So after leaving Fort McCullen, and right before I finished talking about Fort McCullen, I had a chance to go into the live chemical chamber. That was a mind-opening experience to make sure that the full MOP gear that we wore was actually proven that we could trust the MOP gear, right? And that was something that being a chemical officer was really an eye-opening experience, because as any of us can probably allude to go through a gas chamber is something you'll never forget. And so being that officer to tell people to come on in here, you're going to stand, you're going to break your seal, you're going to check your protective mask, right? And so when we talk about wearing a mask for COVID, I'm like, that's a piece of cake compared to the things that we used to have to wear and have to wear it that long, right? So I'm leaving Fort McCullen. You know, I had a gap in service where I was in the reserves at Camp Shelby for a period of time. And then when I got back in service, they had a program called Recalls for Active Duty. And I came back in as an officer again. And that's where I went to Fort Bliss, Texas, and enjoyed Fort Bliss, Texas. Air Defense Artillery. I was in Air Defense Artillery Brigade, 11th Brigade, and then also as a commander there as well. I had 300 soldiers from the general all the way down to the private. Awesome, awesome command. The challenge there, they never had a female in that position. You know, I am dealing with the aspect of being two minorities, not only a female, but also an African-American female in the service. And so at times there would be challenges. I remember being at Fort Leavenworth in school, and I remember having to get up and do a presentation. Our TAC officer was field artillery. He was not used to being around females. Most of his units were all males. And I remember getting up and giving my presentation. And I had studied, and, you know, I was had all my PowerPoint slides and everything was dressed right, dressing in order. And after I gave my presentation, he looked at me, and instead of talking about the areas in my presentation that I could have improved on, that I could have done better, he started talking about my tone of voice and my dialect and said, well, I know that you're from the South and just started going up one side and down the other, just really just tearing me down. And I can remember thinking in my mind that a certain percentage of our grade was basically based on interaction and communicated in class. But I remember walking back to my quarters and thinking to myself, I don't want to participate in class anymore. And I remember in my mind, I remember actually praying to God about it. And this was right before 9/11 hit, because that's where I was at Fort Leavenworth at the time. And I remember in my mind saying to myself, I can do two things. Either I can let this individual shut me down, or I can overcome this challenge. And I remember opening the Bible and seeing the verse where God said, vengeance are mine, saith the Lord. And I said, you know what? This is his problem, not my problem. And later on, I think within a week, we had to do surveys where you had to basically rate your instructor, and then you had to do peer surveys on how we interacted with one another in the classroom. My tech, he was a lieutenant colonel, called me in his office. And at that time, my last name was Malik. And he said, Captain Malik, it was brought to my attention by your peers that they did not appreciate how I talked to you and how I literally really degraded you in class the other day. And he said, I want to go in front of the class and apologize. And I, in my spirit, I was going, yes. But in my heart of heart, I said, sir, I said, if this isn't your apology to me right now, I accept it. You don't have to go in front of the class to do that. And it was just refreshing, because I was like, God, you answered my prayer, you know. And so I've learned that it's imperative, that it's important to treat people the way we want to be treated. People that I've met throughout my life and their career, they're like, how are you so happy? How are you so, you know, at peace? And I credit all that to having that relationship with Jesus, not just knowing and hearing about him, but personally knowing him to be that anchor for me through all that craziness that I've experienced and seen. But he was the anchor that got me through. And then another opportunity I had when I was a cadet, actually, and I was stationed in a unit, you only have a small segment of time to go eat. And I remember going to the shop ed and I asked a fellow cadet, I said, do you want me to pick up you anything? He said, yeah, just get me some Viennese sausage, some crackers and grape juice. You know, we only had a short period of time to eat. So I asked another cadet, Cadet Brumfield, I never forget. I said, do you want me to pick you up anything? No, you don't need to get me anything. So the young cadet that asked me to grab him something, I grabbed his food and I came back and I saw that Cadet Brumfield. And I said, will you go take him his food? He said, sure. So a little bit of time had passed, and the soldier, young cadet that I actually bought the food for, he said, where's my food? He said, I gave you the money, where's my food? And I said, well, I gave it to Cadet Brumfield. And we found Cadet Brumfield up against a cut V eating this other cadet's food. Needless to say, I was livid. So I went to Cadet Brumfield and I just chewed him up. I mean, I just went off on him like, how dare you? I even asked you if you wanted some food and you said no. And I said, had you wanted some, I would have bought, but how dare you eat this other cadet's food? And at the time, in my I'm seeing red, literally going off on this soldier, a first lieutenant called me and said, Cadet, I was a Quinn at the time, that was my maiden name. He said, Cadet Quinn, Cadet Brumfield, and the other cadet, he said, come here right now. And he took us behind the cut V. He said, what are you doing? And I said, he was wrong. I explained the whole story to him. He said, look, he said, you had the right idea, but it was the wrong method. He said, when you all were out here arguing at one another, all these non-commissioned officers had stopped eating and they were watching you all. And he said, what you should have done, if you had a problem with him, you should have called him to the side behind the vehicle and you should have expressed yourself. He said, so you may have won the battle, but you lost the war. And so that was all these times through my military career. I've had times where not only did I do that to someone by showing them, hey, look, it may have been the right, you were totally right in how you felt about what you saw, an injustice or thing that you may have seen. But it was the way that you have to do it. You know what I mean? The word tells us that with love, kindness are they drawn. And so there are times that we had to make an example. And there's also times where you give people teachable opportunities to show them a way in saying, hey, so-and-so, come here. Let me show you the right way to do this, you know? And so those are the things I've learned so much from the military.
It's time for our final break, but there's much more to come with retired Lieutenant Colonel Yolanda Frazier, including some of the most difficult and most emotional assignments the Army ever gave her. A glimpse into a tragic scene during her deployment in Afghanistan, but also the hope she carries as she seeks to educate, empower, and encourage through her nonprofit, Enough International. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.